Hello and welcome to Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on today's programme.
A liberal education is supposed to empower somebody to be an active citizen, a critical participant in things. Often in liberal education, one learns about things having to do with culture and race and poverty and difference. These things are not only about the liberal education of teachers as people in the world, but they're also professional knowledge.
This week, the Teaching Council published its initial teacher education criteria and guidelines for programme providers. And on Inside Education, we continue our series of interviews with prominent scholars of teacher education from the United States. This week, I'll be speaking to Professor Suzanne Wilson of Michigan State University. But first, as always, we go to Barry Hennessy for this week's education news. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello again, Sean. The Minister for Education and Skills, Rory Quinn, this week admitted he's had to revise upward his forecast for the number of children to be educated in Irish schools over the next 6 years. By the year 2017, the DES forecasts an increase of about 45,000 primary and 25,000 secondary students. 40 new schools are to be built to accommodate the increase, with other schools getting extensions to cope with rising enrolments. What we don't know is whether the Department of Education and Skills had advance notice of the preliminary findings of the 2011 census, which were released on Thursday, and which showed that Ireland's population is now about 100,000 people greater than was expected. Most of that population growth is concentrated in areas where demand for additional school places is already acute. Two electoral divisions in Fingal saw population growth over 50% since 2006. Overall, there's been significant population increase in Balbriggan, The Ward, Blakestown, Jobstown and Dencullen. Even though there's been significant evidence of outward migration over the past 2 years, it's clear that many people are choosing to settle where they are, even if we don't know the age profile of the population yet, which of course will be all important in terms of projecting school enrolment. Well, speaking in the national media in the aftermath of his announcement on Monday with regard to those new schools, Minister Quinn admitted that the expansion in educational provision would put pressure on the state's very tight resources, but he insisted on his view of education as an investment rather than a cost. The Minister has refused to rule out an increase in the pupil-teacher ratio in December's budget, given the budgetary restrictions in place, but he gave the clearest indication yet that certain programmes in the education area could be scrapped in the spending review rather than a blanket across-the-board cut to the department's budget. The other major aspect of Minister Quinn's announcement this week concerns school patronage. In the case of each of the 40 schools to be provided, patron bodies will be invited to apply to run these, demonstrating evidence of parental demand for their model of school. Following initial consideration within the Department of Education, the final recommendation to the Minister will come from a new schools establishment group chaired by Dr. Seamus McGuinness. The General Secretary of the Irish Vocational Education Association, Michael Moriarty, welcomed the new patronage arrangements, saying they will enhance transparency and confidence in the decision-making process. The big challenge will be for denominational schools, particularly Catholic ones, as Minister Quinn has indicated that baptismal records alone will not be sufficient grounds for demonstrating parental demand. Now, moving to another issue now that's very high on Rory Quinn's list of priorities, and it's that of literacy. Now, they may be struggling when it comes to conventional ability in English and maths, but Irish 15-year-olds have ranked 8th out of 19 countries in terms of their ability to read computer-based text, such as emails or websites. Only students in Korea, New Zealand, Australia and Japan performed significantly better than Irish teens in the PISA study. An earlier set of results for PISA 2009 showed an alarming decline in literacy standards among Irish students and set the tone for much of the education discussion during the general election campaign. Reacting to this week's digital literacy figures, Minister Rory Quinn said they were encouraging but left no room for complacency. The Minister said he will shortly bring proposals to Cabinet for improvements to teacher education and curriculum content that will build on the progress seen in digital literacy. One thing we don't know is why there should be such a disparity between Irish pupils' digital literacy and pen and paper scores. Researchers at the Educational Research Centre in Drumcondra are looking into this, with the ERC's director, Dr. Peter Archer, speculating that the students may have found the digital content more familiar and interesting than the printed text. The Department of Education and Skills is urging school leavers to apply early for third-level grants using the online portal studentfinance.ie. In all, 35 grant awarding bodies are now using the online applications process, which will become available to all school leavers next year. The City of Dublin VEC has recently been named as the new single grant awarding authority following a competitive process, and it's expected that it will process as many as 70,000 applications a year from next year. One of the main advantages of the new online system is that it will reduce the amount of errors requiring forms to be resubmitted. In areas that use the traditional paper applications, up to 60% of forms have to be sent back because of some error on the part of the candidate. I'll let you decide what that says about our school leavers.
And about our digital literacy.
Yes, indeed. Well, they're absolutely. Finally, Sean, if we've time, one more story. 3,000 additional places are being made available on the Back to Education initiative from this September as part of the government's job initiative. This brings a total number of places available for the next school year to 12,000. The Back to Education initiative is run through the country's VECs and will give unemployed people who left school with low skills or without completing their Leaving Cert the chance to upskill or reskill. The courses are typically certified at Junior Cert, Leaving Cert or FETAC level. In the Dublin area, there will be 419 additional places in the city, 300 in the county and 38 in Dundee. That's this week's Education News, Sean.
Thank you for that, Barry. And Barry Hennessy will, of course, be back at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. You can contact the programme by text message on 086 8962 665. This week, the Teaching Council published its criteria and guidelines for initial teacher education programme providers. We'll be featuring this document in more detail on a future programme, but some points that jumped out for me initially are that from 2016-2017, the entry requirements for primary teaching will include an A1 in PASS or a C3 in Honours Maths, as well as a B1 or higher in both Honours English and Irish. Once you get to college, the academic subject elective offered in some colleges will in future need to have relevance to teacher education and will be done within an allocation of discretionary time. The criteria and guidelines will influence how colleges redesign their initial teacher education programmes. On this programme over the last few months, we have been interviewing US experts on teacher education, and this week we speak to Suzanne Wilson. Suzanne Wilson is a distinguished professor and chair of the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University. Her current work focuses on developing sound measures for tracking what teachers learn in teacher preparation, induction and professional development programmes. When I met up with Suzanne, I first asked her what she would keep in mind if she were charged with the task of redesigning teacher education.
I would try to think about ways to make the relationship between what happens in the university and in the schools as tightly coupled as possible. I do think that using schools as an opportunity to create a sort of intellectual receptive nest for people who are learning how to teach so that they are more apt to understand the relevance of what might otherwise seem abstract knowledge in the university is one of the core challenges. And I do think that figuring out how to get them in schools, but in very structured ways with particular foci and goals and with tools that they would need to use in order to see what you want them to see in schools. T.S. Eliot once said, we can have the experience and miss the meaning. So you can't just expect that if you put people in schools, they're somehow or another going to be able to see what you want them to. So I think closer relationship with schools and the tools and the resources that they need in order to learn from those schools.
But you wouldn't go that extra step and say that all teacher education should be based in schools.
No. All schools aren't good. So you can learn a lot of things from schools that are struggling and from classrooms in which teachers are struggling to figure out what to do with students. And that's very important. But you also, we want, with every generation of teachers, to prepare teachers to be better than the generation that we have now. I think most teachers think about themselves in that way. We want students to be smarter than we are. And so we can't put them in the prison of the status quo of schools. It's also the case that schools are activity-driven places where people are constantly talking about what they're going to do next. They don't talk about the ideas that are core. It's about activities. And we even see this in our College of Education. People tend to talk about what they're going to do in their classes, not what they want to teach in their classes or what they're hoping people will learn. And so I think you need some sort of relationship where people are in schools, immersed in the experience of schooling and in that fast pace, having to make decisions on the fly, and then pulled out and put in situations in which they have other kinds of structures and tools that help them think about that experience in really important ways. And I think if you just have them in schools, you miss the opportunity to both have them reimagine what schools might be like, but also learn from the experiences that they had in those schools.
You talked about the prism of schools as not being a suitable place for preparing future teachers. So, but teacher education itself is not exactly a model way of changing teachers or of inspiring teachers to be really good.
That's right. And I don't think that schools are not a good place for people to learn. I think that they're a necessary but insufficient condition. Then I think also you need to think about the reform of teacher education courses. And I don't know how things are structured in Ireland, but a lot of what undergraduates and graduate students learn about how to teach in the U.S. takes place in other disciplinary departments. So they learn a lot about how to teach or how they don't want to teach mathematics or history or literature from other people in the university. And so I think that we also have to use the same logic for thinking about how to intentionally use their experience in the university as well to think critically about what's working well for them or for their colleagues and what isn't working well. So the same logic of sort of immersing people in an experience and pulling them back, you would have to use both for their teacher education classes and also for their disciplinary classes. And to the extent that you thought it was wise to have some teacher education classes that were intentionally designed to model the kind of instruction you wanted people to engage in, I do not believe that we should always think that teacher educators should be modeling how to teach for the students who are in the class. Think that if we model in class how we want them to teach, that is an effective means for teaching them. First of all, we're teaching adults, not children, and there's significant differences there. Second of all, we actually want them to notice things about what we're doing that they won't notice simply because we do something. So I once taught a class where I modeled how to teach discussion. Every Friday, we would have a discussion about some reading that the students picked, and I would work really hard on thinking about how to design and have this discussion. And then for the second half of the year, I had each of the students in the class who had seen me run discussions for an entire term. They were each week, they were responsible for running all of their each discussions. And one student said to me, "Well, Suzanne, it's like watching a wonderful dancer. We've watched you run discussions all term, but that doesn't help us figure out how to run them ourselves, because that's all backstage." And I do think that there are weaknesses to this logic of teach as you would have them teach. That's not to say that we shouldn't try to be good teachers, but I think we need to think about the varied ways that we should offer instruction in the university and then how to structure opportunities for teachers to learn from those.
Okay, so if we were to take the university part of the pre-service preparation, what do you think should go into that? How should that be designed?
Well, the content knowledge of whatever they're going to teach is obviously a large part, and I think that the work of Deborah and others and Pamela and others has suggested that it's not simply majoring in the subject matter in the way that you would if you were an undergraduate getting an undergraduate degree in mathematics. You have to think about what mathematics people need to know in order to teach math at the elementary level, etc. But I also think that we don't think very hard about the role of the liberal education part of a teacher's education and the role that it plays in their professional preparation. A liberal education is supposed to do a couple of things. It's supposed to give you a broad-based view of the role of ideas and the importance of ideas in the history of various civilizations. A liberal education is supposed to empower somebody to be an active citizen, critical participant in things. Often in liberal education, one learns about things having to do with culture and race and poverty and difference. These things are not only about the liberal education of teachers as people in the world, but they're also professional knowledge. That, say, for instance, an elementary teacher is responsible for thinking about how to prepare her students to be civic participants. And that's not really just about whatever happens in social studies. It's about how they interact with one another, how they interact with ideas. So what happens in the teacher's undergraduate general requirements, we call them often, but the liberal education piece, I think is really an important part of both their own background knowledge, but actually their professional knowledge, and figuring out how to use that knowledge better so that what they learn about things like poverty or social structures or inequity in this country, that's directly relevant to what they understand about schools when they go into them. And I think that we don't think enough about that. It's mainly just their requirements, and they're sort of marginalized when we think about subject matter knowledge and professional preparation.
I think that's interesting, Suzanne, but it also strikes me that if we were talking about how to prepare future doctors or future architects or future engineers, that you wouldn't really be making the same case for a liberal component to their education, or would you?
I think I don't know enough about it, but I think actually in medicine there's been quite a push because of the issues having to do with both the change in the access to information that patients have now, and the fact that the role of doctors is quite different. They're not positioned always to be experts with everyone, but also the more humanities-oriented aspects of being physicians, the fact that one has to think about an ethical code. There's a big press to help physicians think more about how they interact with patients and what kinds of relationships they have with them, and often that is around issues of poverty or difference, because the physicians come from such different backgrounds. So, for instance, there have been movements in some medical schools to have humanities-oriented training for physicians so that they can be better doctors. And that would be related to their liberal education if somebody thought about it. So I do think that in some areas there, I might easily, because the fields have already recognized, make the same kind of argument. But you're right. It's part of the issue is that we try to push most of teacher preparation into the same box that we push their undergraduate education more generally. And so there's this tendency with teacher education to try to double count things. So this you get because it's a liberal education requirement, but let's also count it toward your professional preparation. And that probably does a disservice to the preparation of our teachers, because they ought to first just be treated as knowers and people in the world who should have good undergraduate educations and not worry about the professional preparation piece as much until after they've gotten that good education.
Okay, so you've described then two pillars, one being the liberal education and the other being the subject knowledge education. What then can the university do to make the teaching practice experience more meaningful?
Well, it would be terrific if the university had some way of getting the disciplines to care more about the quality of instruction for undergraduates who were not their majors, because often teachers, even if they're secondary teachers and they're majors in English or majors in history or majors in a science, they identify themselves as secondary teachers. And so sometimes in some universities they're called terminal students, because they're not the students who are going to go on to advanced degrees in those departments. And so they're separated immediately from the students who are seen as the students who are part of the identity of a department. And I think that means that there are decisions that are made about the people who teach the courses for people and how intellectually whether the people who teach those courses are active researchers, are people who are really excited about the discipline and contributing to the, you know, it's cutting edge of the field. People will tend to put people who are less productive in the courses for the terminal students and reserve the faculty who are the researchers and the scholars and the people who continue to grow and be intellectually alive for the students who are identified as the students of that department. It would be terrific if there were ways of universities encouraging through incentives and other structures more ownership of those students. In large universities in this country, it's very difficult to do that. In smaller universities where there's a lot of cross-department and cross-university collaboration among faculty and less differentiation of role, it's much easier. But in the big universities, it's very hard.
And do you think that the university has a role to play in helping the students notice what's happening when they go into a school on school placement?
I think that's a major role for the college or the teacher department or the school of education. I think helping people become sensitive observers of schools is, I think, is an not well understood instructional goal for the teacher preparation. I think it falls into a class with me with listening also, that I think learning how to see and learning how to hear, we consider these to be natural acts, things that everybody can do walking into a situation. And actually being able to hear what you're saying is a skill that you need to that someone needs to develop, because we often put ourselves on top of what you're saying instead of trying to keep ourselves out of what you're saying and interpret what you're saying, which is exactly what a teacher needs to do. A teacher needs to try to understand what you're trying to say, not what they want you to they want to think that you're saying. And the same is true of seeing. We need to do a much better job of trying to help people learn how to see schools. And the same phenomenon is at play, that people go in and they are so blinded by what they think they should be seeing, and that twists so much what they observe that they don't even see what is actually going on. Teaching people just to describe what it is that they just witnessed is a profoundly difficult task, both in teacher education but also in other forms of education, like preparing educational researchers and things like that.
And when you talk about the preparation of teachers, it sounds like, and because your own background is preparing secondary teachers, it sounds like you have very much in mind the parallel model, which what I mean by that is where you prepare your subject matter and then you have your education content, and it's like as if they're separated. Whereas in Ireland, we have a combination of some which follow that model and some which are concurrent, which have their education alongside their subject matter preparation.
No, I think that's ideal. I think actually that's the idea of getting people into schools faster, because I think that, first of all, in their mind, whether they're in schools or not, when they're in a disciplinary class and they want to be a teacher, they are thinking already about the relationship between what they're learning and what's going to happen in school. And we don't capitalize on that. So they use their apprenticeship of observation. They use their assumptions about teaching and learning or about what they're going to do as a teacher. And I think getting them into education classes, which are helping them learn to see and listen and think about curricular issues while they're also taking the disciplinary classes and capitalizing on what could be the interaction of those two lines of study, is really much more ideal.
Okay. And how would you go about assessing whether or not somebody is ready to be a beginning teacher?
Well, I think the way that we do it is, I'll stick with the way that we do it right now. We prepare them in lots of different kinds of professional classes. We wait until they finish their content preparation. And then we have them in a year, for a year-long internship. We have a model of them being gradually immersed into practice. So they learn in August where they're going to be. They learn in April where they will be in school in August. So they have an opportunity to meet the teacher. They set up meetings with the teacher at the beginning of the year. So they're with the teacher from the beginning of the year, planning how she or he is going to set up the classroom physically and also organizationally, what she's going to focus on with the students early on. But they are not responsible for any teaching. So they help the teacher get the year started. They might work with a small group teaching some reading or working on some small piece of a lesson. And they have a focused class where they're watching and they're listening and they're observing and they're getting ready to teach. And then they teach one class for a week, and then they are pulled out of that teaching for 3 weeks. And they work on trying to understand what happened during that week and get ready for the next immersion. And then they go back in and they teach for 2 weeks, that one class, not all day. For the rest of the day, they're watching the teacher and helping her or him with the classes. And it's not until March that they teach all the teacher's classes all day for a month on their own. So they go in and out of a class, And coming out of the class is intentionally designed to help them think about what it was that they witnessed. I'm resisting the language of reflection because it means so many different kinds of things, but something about saying, I had this experience, and now the program and my teachers are responsible for helping me deconstruct that experience and try to understand what happened. And that scaffolded, let them teach a little bit, pull them out, let them teach some more, pull them out, so that by Christmas or by the mid-year, before January, if someone isn't, quote-unquote, with the program, then they're dismissed from the internship. They're not allowed to do what's called lead teaching. The other ones are called guided lead teaching. They're not actually allowed to teach in March, and they're released from the program. They're told that they can come back and try again. But in that way, we say, really, we have a responsibility to not let you teach if you haven't taken an opportunity to take this fall and learn how to gradually take on the role.
And what kind of an engagement do the student teachers have with the university during the course of this year?
They take two classes. Well, they take three classes, but one of the classes is actually credit for being in the school. So that's just field experience. Then they take a subject matter methods class, which is, in that class, the instructors in the university are working with them to get ready for their guided lead teaching in their classrooms. So they're working on lessons, they're reading curriculum materials, they're talking about how everything lines up with the standards. And they also take a professional seminar, which is a range of, a potpourri of issues. So they'll learn more about special education. That seminar often picks up threads that were planted earlier on in the program, how to deal with students with special needs, how to deal with English language learners. These are topics that they've encountered before, but now that they're in a classroom, their own classroom, we pull those readings and experiences back into the front of their mind and try to get them to think about how do you apply that knowledge now that you're in a classroom where you really care because they're your students. We also do things like help them get ready for the job market, think about putting together a professional portfolio and things like that. So all year they take two classes, two each term, and they do that on Friday. So they're for Fridays, usually they're not in the school, but they only do it for 10, they're only in our classes for 10 weeks because they have that 5-week period in March and April where they're in the school all week, all day for the month during their lead teaching.
And that was Suzanne Wilson from Michigan State University. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programs on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. Thanks to my guests, Suzanne Wilson, and to Barry Hennessy for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.